Chapter 16. It seems that the housekeeper and the two Mr. Wellers were no sooner left together on the occasion of their first becoming acquainted than the housekeeper called to her assistance Mr. Slithers the barber, who had been lurking in the kitchen in expectation of her summons, and with many smiles and much sweetness introduced him as one who would assist her in the responsible office of entertaining her distinguished visitors. Indeed, apostrophe said she, without Mr. Slithers I should have been placed in quite an awkward situation. Apostrophe, there is no call for any awkwardness, mum, apostrophe said Mr. Weller with the utmost politeness. No call whatsoever. A lady, apostrophe added the old gentleman, looking about him with the air of one who establishes an incontrovertible position, a lady can't be awkward. Matter is otherwise purwited. Apostrophe, the housekeeper inclined her head and smiled yet more sweetly. The barber, who had been fluttering about Mr. Weller and Sam in a state of great anxiety to improve their acquaintance, rubbed his hands and cried, "Here, here. Very true, sir." Apostrophe, whereupon Sam turned about and steadily regarded him for some seconds in silence. I never knew, apostrophe said Sam, fixing his eyes in a ruminative manner upon the blushing barber, I never knew, but one know your trade, but he woes worth a dozen, and woes indeed do it to his calling. Apostrophe, apostrophe, was he in the easy shaving way, sir, apostrophe inquired Mr. Slithers, or in the cutting and curling line? Apostrophe, apostrophe, both, apostrophe replied Sam. Easy shaven was his natter, and cuttin' and curlin' was his pride and glory. His whole delight was in his trade. He spent all his money in bears, and run in debt for 'em besides, and there they was a growling of a down in the front cellar all day long, and ineffectually gnashing their teeth, while the grease o' their relations and friends was being retailed in galley pots in the shop above, and the first floor winder was ornamented with their heads. Not to speak o' the dreadful aggravation it must have been to 'em to see a man always a walking up and down the pavement outside, with the portrait of a bear in his last agonies, and underneath in large letters, another fine animal was slaughtered yesterday at Jenkinson's. Howsever, there they was, and there Jenkinson was, till he was took worry ill with some inner disorder, lost the use of his legs, and was confined to his bed. Fear he laid a worry long time, but sich was his pride in his profession, even then, that whenever he was worse than usual the doctor used to go downstairs and say, Jenkinson's worry low this morning, we must give the bears a stir, and as sure as ever they stirred him up a bit, and made him roar, Jenkinson opens his eyes, if he was ever so bad, calls out, there's the bears, and revives a gin. Apostrophe, astonishing. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the barber. Not a bit, apostrophe, said Sam. Human matter neat as imported. One day the doctor happening to say, I shall look in as usual tomorrow morning. Jenkinson catches hold of his hand and says, Doctor, he says, will you grant me one favor? I will, Jenkinson, says the doctor. Then, Doctor, says Jenkinson, will you come unshaved, and let me shave you? I will, says the doctor. God bless you, says Jenkinson. Next day the doctor came, and arter he'd been shaved all skillful and reglar, he says, Jenkinson, he says, it's worry plain this does you good. Now, he says, I've got a coachman as has got a beard, that it 'ud warm your heart to work on, and though the footman, he says, hasn't got much of a beard, still he's a trying it on with a pair o' whiskers to that extent, that razors is Christian charity. If they take it in turns to mind the carriage, when it's a waitin' below, he says, what's to hinder you from operating on both of 'em every day as well as upon me? You've got 6 children. He says, what's to hinder you from shaving all their heads, and keeping them shaved? You've got 2 assistants in the shop downstairs, what's to hinder you from cutting and curling them as often as you like? Do this, he says, and you're a man of gin. Jenkinson squeezed the doctor's hand and begun that worry day. He kept his tools upon the bed, and whenever he felt himself getting worse, he turned to let one of the children who was a running about the house with heads like clean Dutch cheeses, and shaved him a gin. One day the lawyer come to make his will. All the time he was a taking it down, Jenkinson was secretly a clipping away at his hair with a large pair of scissors. "What's that ear snipping noise?" says the lawyer every now and then. "It's like a man having his hair cut." "It is worry like a man having his hair cut," says poor Jenkinson, hiding the scissors, and looking quite innocent. By the time the lawyer found it out, he was worry nearly bald. Jenkinson was kept alive in this way for a long time, but at last one day he has in all the children one arter another, shaves each on them worry clean, and gives him one kiss on the crown o' his head. Then he has in the two assistants, and arter cutting and curling of them in the first style of elegance, says he should like to hear the voice o' the greasiest bear, which request is immediately complied with. Then he says, that he feels worry happy in his mind, and wishes to be left alone, and then he dies, previously cutting his own hair and making one flat curl in the worry middle of his forehead. Apostrophe, this anecdote produced an extraordinary effect, not only upon Mr. Slithers, but upon the housekeeper also, who evinced so much anxiety to please and be pleased, that Mr. Weller, with a manner betokening some alarm, conveyed a whispered inquiry to his son whether he had gone too fur. Apostrophe, what do you mean by too fur? Apostrophe, demanded Sam. In that ear little compliment respectin' the want of awkwardness in ladies, Sammy, apostrophe, replied his father. You don't think she's fallen in love with you in consequence o' that, do you? Apostrophe, said Sam. More unlikelier things have come to pass, my boy, apostrophe, replied Mr. Weller in a hoarse whisper. I'm always afeard of an advertent captivation, Sammy. If I know it how to make myself ugly or unpleasant, I do it, Samivel, rather than live in this here state of perpetual terror. Apostrophe, Mr. Weller had, at that time, no further opportunity of dwelling upon the apprehensions which beset his mind, for the immediate occasion of his fears proceeded to lead the way downstairs, apologizing as they went for conducting him into the kitchen, which apartment, however, she was induced to proffer for his accommodation in preference to her own little room, the rather as it afforded greater facilities for smoking, and was immediately adjoining the ale cellar. The preparations which were already made sufficiently proved that these were not mere words, of course, for on the deal table were a sturdy ale jug and glasses, flanked with clean pipes and a plentiful supply of tobacco for the old gentleman and his son, while on a dresser hard by was goodly store of cold meat and other eatables. At sight of these arrangements, Mr. Weller was at first distracted between his love of joviality and his doubts, whether they were not to be considered as so many evidences of captivation having already taken place. But he soon yielded to his natural impulse, and took his seat at the table with a very jolly countenance. As to imbibing any o' this here flagrant feed, mum, in the presence of a lady, apostrophe, said Mr. Weller, taking up a pipe and laying it down again, it couldn't be. Samivel, total abstinence, if you please. Apostrophe, but I like it of all things, apostrophe, said the housekeeper. No, apostrophe, rejoined Mr. Weller, shaking his head, no. Apostrophe, upon my word I do, apostrophe, said the housekeeper. Apostrophe, Mr. Slithers knows I do. Apostrophe, Mr. Weller coughed, and notwithstanding the barber's confirmation of the statement, said no again, but more feebly than before. The housekeeper lighted a piece of paper, and insisted on applying it to the bowl of the pipe with her own fair hands. Mr. Weller resisted. The housekeeper cried that her fingers would be burnt. Mr. Weller gave way. The pipe was ignited. Mr. Weller drew a long puff of smoke, and detecting himself in the very act of smiling on the housekeeper, put a sudden constraint upon his countenance, and looked sternly at the candle, with a determination not to captivate himself, or encourage thoughts of captivation in others. From this iron frame of mind he was roused by the voice of his son. "I don't think," said Sam, who was smoking with great composure and enjoyment, "that if the lady was agreeable it 'ud be worry far out o' the way for us four, to make up a club of our own like the governor's does upstairs, and let him," Sam pointed with the stem of his pipe towards his parent, "be the president." The housekeeper affably declared that it was the very thing she had been thinking of. The barber said the same. Mr. Weller said nothing, but he laid down his pipe, as if in a fit of inspiration, and performed the following maneuvers. Unbuttoning the three lower buttons of his waistcoat and pausing for a moment, to enjoy the easy flow of breath consequent upon this process, he laid violent hands upon his watch chain, and slowly and with extreme difficulty drew from his fob an immense double-cased silver watch, which brought the lining of the pocket with it, and was not to be disentangled, but by great exertions and an amazing redness of face. Having fairly got it out at last, he detached the outer case, and wound it up with a key of corresponding magnitude, then put the case on again, and having applied the watch to his ear to ascertain that it was still going, gave it some half dozen hard knocks on the table to improve its performance. "That," said Mr. Weller, laying it on the table with its face upwards, "is the title and emblem o' this here society. Sammy, reach them two stools this way for the wakin' cheers. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Weller's watch is wound up and now a-goin'. Order." By way of enforcing this proclamation, Mr. Weller, using the watch after the manner of a president's hammer, and remarking with great pride that nothing hurt it, and that falls and concussions of all kinds materially enhanced the excellence of the works, and assisted the regulator, knocked the table a great many times, and declared the association formally constituted. "And don't let's have no grinning at the cheer, Samivel," said Mr. Weller to his son, "or I shall be committing you to the cellar, and then perhaps we may get into what the Americans call a fix, and the English a question o' privileges." Having uttered this friendly caution, the president settled himself in his chair with great dignity, and requested that Mr. Samivel would relate an anecdote. "I've told one," said Sam. "Wery good, sir. Tell another," returned the chair. "We was a-talking just now, sir," said Sam, turning to Slithers, "about barbers. Pursuing that ere fruitful theme, sir, I'll tell you in a wery few words a romantic little story about another barber as perhaps you may never have heard." Samivel. Said Mr. Weller, again bringing his watch and the table into smart collision, "address your observations to the cheer, sir, and not to private individuals." "And if I might rise to order," said the barber in a soft voice, and looking round him with a conciliatory smile as he leant over the table, with the knuckles of his left hand resting upon it, "if I might rise to order, I would suggest that barbers is not exactly the kind of language which is agreeable and soothing to our feelings. You, sir, will correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe there is such a word in the dictionary as hairdressers." "Well, but suppose he wasn't a hairdresser," suggested Sam. "Why then, sir, be parliamentary and call him one all the more," returned his father. "In the same way as every gentleman in another place is a honorable, every barber in this place is a hairdresser. When you read the speeches in the papers, and see as one gentleman says of another, 'the honorable member, if he will allow me to call him so,' you will understand, sir, that that means, 'if he will allow me to keep up that ear pleasant and universal fiction.'" It is a common remark, confirmed by history and experience, that great men rise with the circumstances in which they are placed. Mr. Weller came out, so strong in his capacity of chairman, that Sam was for some time prevented from speaking by a grin of surprise, which held his faculties enchained, and at last subsided in a long whistle of a single note. Nay, the old gentleman appeared, even to have astonished himself, and that to no small extent, as was demonstrated by the vast amount of chuckling in which he indulged, after the utterance of these lucid remarks. "Here's the story," said Sam. "Once upon a time there was a young hairdresser as opened a wery smart little shop with four wax dummies in the winder, two gentlemen and two ladies, the gentlemen with blue dots for their beards, wery large whiskers, audacious heads of hair, uncommon clear eyes, and nostrils of amazing pinkness, the ladies with their heads o' one side, their right forefingers on their lips, and their forms do look beautiful, in which last respect they had the advantage over the gentlemen, as wasn't allowed, but wery little shoulder, and terminated rather abrupt in fancy drapery. He had also a many hairbrushes, and toothbrushes bottled up in the winder, neat glass cases on the counter, a floor-clothed cutting room upstairs, and a weighing machine in the shop, right opposite the door. But the great attraction and ornament was the dummies, which this here young hairdresser was constantly a-running out in the road to look at, and constantly a-running in again, to touch up and polish. In short, he was so proud on them, that when Sunday come, he was always wretched and miserable to think they was behind the shutters, and looked anxiously for Monday on that account. One o' these dummies was a favorite with him beyond the others, and when any of his acquaintance asked him why he didn't get married as the young ladies he knowed, in particular, often did he used to say, 'Never. I never will enter into the bonds of wedlock,' he says, 'until I meet with a young woman as realizes my idea o' that ere fairest dummy with the light hair. Then, and not till then,' he says, 'I will approach the altar.' All the young ladies he knowed as had got dark hair told him this was wery sinful, and that he was worshipping a idol. But them as was at all near the same shade as the dummy colored up wery much, and was observed to think him a wery nice young man." "Samivel," said Mr. Weller, gravely, "a member o' this association being one o' that ere tender sex which is now immediately referred to, I have to request that you will make no reflections." "I ain't a-makin' any, am I?" inquired Sam. "Order, sir," rejoined Mr. Weller, with severe dignity. Then, sinking the chairman in the father, he added, in his usual tone of voice, "Samivel, drive on." Sam interchanged a smile with the housekeeper, and proceeded. The young hairdresser hadn't been in the habit o' making this avowal above 6 months, when he encountered a young lady as was the wery picter o' the fairest dummy. "Now," he says, "it's all up. I am a slave." The young lady was, not only the picter o' the fairest dummy, but she was wery romantic, as the young hairdresser was too, and he says, "Oh," he says, "here's a community o' feeling, here's a flow o' soul," he says, "here's a interchange o' sentiment." The young lady didn't say much, o' course, but she expressed herself agreeable, and shortly arterwards went to see him with a mutual friend. The hairdresser rushes out to meet her, but directly she sees the dummies she changes color and falls a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.